below him as he rocketed away from Borlaeus. Nine, report!
Mine went low. There was a juggernaut assault vehicle down there providing that fire.
And it looked like they were reinforcing the conduit.
I saw that. I nailed a ferrocrete mixer.
Wedge checked his scanners. We have a squadron of interceptors headed in our direction.
What do you want to do? I'm good for another run.
Another run would be suicide, Nine, and you don't have the fuel to play.
Sir, I'm good for another run!
Wedge shook his head. You're heading home while you can still get there.
No!
That's an order, Nine, not an invitation to debate. Wedge could feel Corrin's disappointment. It's exactly what I felt when Luke ordered me out of the trench on the first Death Star run. Get clear, Corrin. You can't do any more good back there. Dejection filled Corrin's voice.
As ordered, sir. What are you going to do?
Blowing the conduit is our mission, and the others can't break off to do it. Wedge Antilles slowly smiled. What the imps have set up there will stop almost any pilot. I'm going to remind them that in Rogue Squadron, we don't take just any pilot. Kirtan Lor fussed with the hem of his tunic and adjusted his cap with a tug on the bill. He wanted to feel confident about his recall to Coruscant, but he did not dare allow himself that indulgence. His mission had been the destruction of Rogue Squadron. While half of it had died at Borlaeus, the other half lived, with Wedge Antilles and Corrin Horn still flying. In fact, the unit had amassed a considerable list of kills while it was his to destroy, so he could not imagine Isan Izard would be in a pleasant mood. He cracked a smile. I cannot imagine her ever being in a good mood. The door to her office slid open, and Kirtan's smile died. Izard again wore her Scarlet Admiral's uniform, complete with a black armband on her left arm. Her hair had been drawn back and fastened at the nape of her neck with a black clasp. She gestured invitingly, but the mannerly nature of her greeting only played through her hand. Her mismatched eyes prophesied doom, but he thought it might be deferred instead of immediate.
Please, Agent Law, do come in. I trust the journey from Borlaeus was not too tiring.
He shook his head, doing his best to hide any trace of fatigue.
I apologize for not being here sooner. My original agenda was disrupted, hence the week's delay in my arrival.
I know about it. Another operation demanded some resources that I had planned to use for your return.
She casually waved away concern over the delay. Something Kirtan found mildly annoying, since she had caused it, and his week on Toprawa.
I trust you spent your time on Toprawa well.
Well?
Toprawa had been a rebel transfer point for the stolen data about the first Death Star. As punishment for their complicity in the rebellion, the population saw its world reduced to a pre-industrial state, where banthas were the swiftest form of travel, and fire was the highest level of energy production available to the native people. Imperial forces lived in gleaming citadels that remained lit like beacons throughout the night, becoming visible monuments to what the people of Toprawa had lost through their perfidy.
You studied their suffering, yes?
Her dark brows arrowed together.
You saw what they have become.
Kirtan swallowed hard.
I have seen, yes. They are wretched and pathetic.
And you witnessed one of their festivals?
He nodded slowly. The festival involved a company of stormtroopers driving a cart laden with sacks of grain into the center of a village. To receive the grain, the villagers were required to squirm on their bellies, worming their way forward, all the time weeping and wailing lamentations over the Emperor's death. Food was doled out based on some troopers' belief in the sincerity of the mourning. Kirtan had no doubts that many of the people had come to believe they truly did regret the Emperor's death.
Those people, Agent Law, conspired with the Emperor's murderers. They have learned that their actions have consequences, and they regret their past disloyalty. Her eyes tightened at the corners. In their previous arrogance, they dared believe the Empire was superfluous and could be replaced. Now they know this is not true. All that is good in their lives comes from the Empire. They have been shown the truth and now live for a chance to be allowed back into our Brotherhood. I remember.
Izard's harsh expression slackened slightly.
I recall your visual retention rate. T'Prawa must have been meant as a lesson in contrition.
Kirtan raised his chin slightly, exposing his throat.
Madam Director, I regret deeply not having completed my mission.
You do?
Izard opened her hands, and surprise widened her eyes.
How is it you believe you have failed?
You sent me out to destroy Rogue Squadron.
Kirtan's head twisted slightly to the side.
I have failed to do this.
It is true that Rogue Squadron still exists, though for how much longer is in serious debate. The attack on Borlaeus hurt them badly. Your report made this quite apparent.
She smiled, and Kirtan had to suppress a shudder.
More important than that was the information you provided about General Derricote's private enterprise on Borlaeus. You could not have hidden it from me, of course, since it was key to the defense that sent the rebels away without a victory.
Kirtan Lor bowed his head to her.
I am glad you were pleased.
As he looked back up, her expression changed again, and it did not speak to anything even approximating pleasure on her part. It also missed mild discomfort by a wide margin, turning his mouth into a desert and his stomach into a home for a sarlacc.
What did I do?
When he swallowed, his larynx scraped at his throat as if both were made of stone.
What did I fail to do? I had expected something more of you, Agent Law. Can you imagine what that is?
He shook his head.
I cannot. No, indeed you cannot. And do you know why you cannot?
No.
Her hissed words echoed through the nearly empty chamber.
It is because your imagination has atrophied to the point of lifelessness. Recall, if you will, what Gil Bastra thought of you.
Kirtan's face burned.
He felt I relied on my retention of knowledge too much, and used it to compensate for a lack of analysis. I remember this, and I have tried to change my ways. I had done an analysis of probable rebel strategies, and I isolated a number of worlds where I felt they would strike after they hit the Hansara system. And I was right, because Borlaeus was on that list.
And how did you come to be at Borlaeus?
You sent me there.
I sent you there.
She held her right hand out to her side, then brought the left hand into the same position with a similar gesture.
Therefore, you concluded
that your analysis of rebel strategy paralleled mine. Hence you sent me to Borlaeus.
She brought her hands together, interlacing her fingers.
You began analysis, found what you thought was corroboration for it, and then, instead of further testing your analysis and this corroborating evidence, you stopped thinking. Consider the utter absurdity of your conclusion.
What?
Kirtan Law, are you so simple-minded as to assume that if I could predict where the rebels were going to strike, I would send you and you alone to be there and observe their attack? I assure you, I do not think so highly of your martial skills.
The sarlacc in his stomach grew restless and began gnawing its way free of his belly.
Borlaeus should have fallen, and did not, only because Derricote had hidden resources available to defend it. If she were able to predict where the rebels would show up, she would have opposed them with significantly greater force, and have struck a solid blow against them.
From the beginning, Agent Law, the difficulty with the rebellion has been in locating them. Since the Emperor's death, they've been able to spread out and diversify their bases, making them more difficult to destroy. Your effort against the base at Talassia was commendable. Had Admiral Devlier not been stupid, Rogue Squadron might have been eliminated. The importance of that example, however, is to show you the vast problem we have had in finding the rebels we want to kill.
Isan Izard clasped her hands at the small of her back.
Borlaeus is but one of 24 worlds that provides the rebels access to the core worlds and even Imperial Center herself. Defending against those attacks is nearly impossible and utterly ridiculous if one bears in mind that the destruction of the rebellion is the only way the preservation and restoration of the Empire can take place. This I do have utmost in my mind, and it is this consideration that sent you to Borlaeus.
Kirtan concentrated for a moment.
The only thing I did at Borlaeus was discover Derricote's covert operation. But if she had known about that previously, she would have dealt with him herself.
You sent me to spy on General Derricote?
Izard nodded, almost mechanically.
He has skills that are useful to me. The fact that he had managed to repair and make operational the old Alderaanian biotics facility indicated that his skills had not atrophied. After I received your report, I sent for him and left my own people in charge of Borlaeus. In fact, he is here now.
My passage was delayed because you used ships meant for me to fetch him away.
Very good, Agent Law. Your report indicated he had the resources needed to resist a casual invitation. The arrival of a superstar destroyer proved enough to convince him to join me here. I have my people safeguarding his operation for him, tightening defenses and the like. His facility is held hostage against his cooperation.
Kirtan closed his eyes for a moment, hoping all the confusion and conflicting thoughts in his mind would sort themselves out. They did not. He opened his eyes and saw her studying him as a scavenger would study carrion.
Forgive me, Madam Director, but I've lost track of your mission for me.
Your mission, Agent Law, is the same as it has always been. Destroy Rogue Squadron. The fact that I choose other missions for you from time to time should not deflect you from your primary duty.
Then you will be sending me back out into the galaxy to pursue them?
No. You will remain here and work with General Derricote.
Kirtan opened his mouth and started to ask a question, then closed it. He watched her for a moment, then bowed his head.
As you wish, Madam Director.
No.
As it must be.
She turned away from him and faced the windows that looked out over Imperial City.
There is no need to send you in their pursuit. You see, soon enough, they will be here. And when they are, it will be quite the welcome you have prepared for them.
Thirty-six.
Get going, Nine! Defend yourself if you can't run, but get out of here!
Wedge rolled his fighter to give himself a final look at Corrin's X-Wing.
You've done good.
The other pilot gave him a thumbs up.
I'll be waiting for the rest of you to get outbound.
See you then. Wedge pulled the X-Wing back over past vertical and saw the planet descend to fill his canopy. While the four proton torpedoes he and Corrin had loosed at the conduit had not destroyed it, the burning ferrocrete mixer did mark the target rather nicely. Knowing surprise had been irrevocably lost, Wedge brought his fighter down in a spiral that put him 5 kilometers out from the target at just under 4 clicks altitude. As Han once told me, stealth and subtlety work well, but for making lasting impressions, a blaster does just fine. He brought his X-Wing around, and on a heading that paralleled the valley, dropped the nose so it pointed at the fire burning in the distance, and started his dive. I definitely want this to be a lasting impression. Green laser bolts from the Juggernaut vehicle lanced up through the night at him. Minok whined, but Wedge just dropped the fighter below the line of fire, or bounced up above it, constantly forcing the gunners to adjust their sights up and down or side to side.
Shooting at a fighter means that you have a lot more movement to account for. Very few land vehicles can dance around this much. And none of them can do what I have in mind.
The range to target indicator on his console scrolled meters off by the hundreds as he dove in on the conduit. A peace washed over him, despite the Imperial fire being directed toward him. He knew he wasn't slipping into some Jedi trance. As much as he admired Luke, he knew he'd never master his friend's mythical skills. The sense of serenity seemed born of a conviction that he had to succeed in destroying the conduit. And, more importantly, a lifetime of experience that told him the forces on the ground couldn't stop him. 1 kilometer out from the target, Wedge pulled his throttle back and reversed the engine's thrust. As the Juggernaut's laser batteries brought their beams together to burn him from the sky, the X-Wing dropped like a rock. In virtual freefall, it hurtled down toward the canyon floor. The Juggernaut's gunners, perhaps believing they had in fact hit the fighter, or perhaps horrified at its uncontrolled descent, stopped shooting. Not that it would have mattered. 100 meters from the ground, Wedge clicked in the repulsor lift engines, and their whine drowned out Minok's terrified scream. The fighter's fall ended abruptly in a bouncing, bobbing hover barely 5 meters from the canyon's sandy floor. Dust billowed up around the X-Wing, and the lasers in the boxy Juggernaut's forward turret began to track down. Behind the vehicle, visible in the red and gold light of the burning mixer, stormtroopers and masons began to scatter. Running his engines to zero thrust, Wedge ruddered the X-Wing's nose in line with the Juggernaut and pulled the trigger on his flight stick. A single proton torpedo jetted out at the assault vehicle. The coruscating blue energy projectile pierced the Juggernaut's windscreen. It immolated the cockpit crew and melted its way into the vehicle's main body. There, it detonated, swelling the Juggernaut with energy and rounding out its sharp corners before blasting it apart. Armor shrapnel sprayed throughout the area. It made the X-Wing shield spark for a moment, but through them, Wedge could see the aft end of the vehicle tumble back up and over the conduit to fall on the other side. Its burning hulk silhouetted the conduit. Wedge thumbed his weapon's control over to lasers and pulled the trigger. Using the rudder pedals, he rocked the fighter back and forth, peppering construction vehicles and plasteel forms with scarlet energy bolts. Scaffolding collapsed, and semi-fluid ferrocrete oozed from the burning forms. Stormtroopers darted back and forth, seeking any cover they could find. He made no attempt to target them specifically. Using a starfighter's weapons to kill an individual was akin to using a lightsaber to trim loose threads from a garment. It would do the job, but there were easier ways that were far more economical. He switched back to proton torpedoes and armed two. Focusing his aiming reticle on the ferrocrete pipe, he hit the trigger, then punched power to the repulsor lift drives to vault his ship into the air. The paired torpedoes blasted into and through the conduit in a shower of sparks. 10 meters beyond the pipe itself, they exploded, igniting a rogue star right there in the canyon. The shockwave rocked the fighter. It disintegrated the pipe, shearing it off at both ends, then rolled on with such force that it snuffed the fires burning in the vehicles. The canyon walls shook, starting rocks and dust tumbling down. The explosion's harsh glare gave Wedge one last glance at the complete destruction of the target zone. Then the fireball imploded, plunging the canyon into complete darkness. He allowed himself the hint of a smile. Conduit's gone. Now we start working on my objective. Wedge punched his throttle full forward and jettisoned his empty fuel pod. Rogue leader here. Mission accomplished.
Four here, lead. All eyeballs blinded. All rogues are safe. Squints and rogues inbound your position.
Brohr's voice stopped for a moment.
We'll be there before they are.
Time to head home, rogues. Let's outrun them. Wedge brought his fighter around on a course that would link up with the other four fighters in the squadron. Nine is leading the way out, and will report trouble.
Negative, lead.
The anxiety in Nuwara's voice sank like ice through Wedge.
I've checked. Nine is nowhere on my forward scan.
Angry with himself, Corin considered violating Commander Antilles' order and shadowing him anyway. That thought survived about as long as Peshk had in the first fight for Black Moon. He's right. Your fuel reserves are down. He's given you a mission, and you're to complete it. Head out and make sure the run is clear. Whistler, boost my sensors. I want as a complete picture of the theater here as you can give me. Full threat assessments. The astromech droid chirped happily. His first list of fighters showed only 3 eyeballs left in the dogfight with Rogue Squadron. A full squadron of squints was inbound, but their threat assessments were in decimal points. They were no threat to him, and scant little threat to his squadron mates. While he could not ignore them, there was no reason they would interfere with his run out of the system. The numbers on 2 of them climbed slightly higher. What's with those 2? Whistler splashed a tactical display on Corin's monitor. 2 of the squints had broken off to run a flyby and possible intercept on a body moving through the atmosphere. The numbers Whistler used to describe that falling object showed its fall to be controlled, and Corin was fairly certain that little fact would not have been lost upon the TIE pilots. Whistler, do you think they're closing in on one of our assault shuttles? A crisp note answered him as Whistler tagged the shuttle as the Devonian. Yeah, I thought so. Yanking his stick back to his breastbone, Corin brought the snub fighter over in a big loop. Peach, you're going to owe me big time for this one. The droid tootled at him with low tones. Yes, I do know what I'm doing. If I let my dive drive me instead of burning up fuel, we'll be fine. Corin eased his throttle back. And no, I don't want you to calculate the odds on this. I've never asked for the odds before, and I don't want them now. Odds only matter when you're engaged in games of chance. And if Paige's people are going to have any chance, this can't be a game. Corin's dive was bringing him high, hot, and on an angle at the rear arc of the interceptors. He focused his attention on the second squint. He couldn't switch over to proton torpedoes because a target lock would warn them of the threat they faced. If he was going to succeed, he needed things to be fast, and that meant the first interceptor had to die on his first pass. Just over a kilometer out, Corin pushed his throttle forward and leveled out to come straight in at the interceptors. A bit more angle, and maybe I can get both of them at the same time. He switched his weapon over to lasers and linked them so they would fire in tandem. He dropped his targeting crosshairs on the rear ship, and when they flashed green, he pulled the trigger and kept it down. Four pairs of red energy darts perforated the slant-winged interceptor. The first hits on the right wing started the ship rolling. Then it jinked up into Corin's line of fire. Four laser bolts converged, puncturing the cockpit and filling the interior of the ship with fire. A roiling explosion blasted the squint apart and forced Corin to roll and dive to avoid the worst of the debris cloud. Snapping back to his previous orientation, he looked up at where the other interceptor should have been. He didn't see it, but before he could even begin to wonder if it had somehow died too, laser fire carved into the strength of his aft shield. Great. All I need is some Sith spawn hotshot pilot in that squint. He reinforced the aft shield, rolled, then hit the left rudder and slewed his ship around to try to give him an angle on the interceptor. He couldn't see it on his forward or rear scope, so he hauled back on the stick and started a climbing loop. The interceptor appeared dead center in his aft scan, and again laced his aft shield with green fire. Who is this clown? Corin came over, rolled up onto the port S-foil, then chopped his throttle back and let the X-Wing drop toward the planet. Whistler, calm to one-click radius! Tell the transport to go to ground as soon as possible, because this guy is good. I want room to operate. A harsh whistle stung him. A question appeared on his display. Yes, of course I'm better. I'm toying with him. Now reinforce those shields, and hang on! The interceptor began to close on Corin's tail. Pulling back on the stick, Corin leveled his ship out, and the interceptor swooped in behind him. The Corellian waited until the interceptor closed to 500 meters, then sideslipped his ship to starboard. Hitting hard left rudder and bringing his throttle back up, his X-Wing's nose swung back toward the squint. Though more maneuverable than their vertically winged predecessors, the interceptor's broad wings still gave them yaw problems. The squint's sideslip came slow and presented Corin with a wonderful target. His first shot hit solidly on the starboard wing, blazing two angry holes in it. The squint began to roll, and Corin shot again. The scarlet bolt shot fore and aft of the ball cockpit. The Imperial pilot finished the roll and dove. Corin kicked the X-Wing up on the port S-foil and dove after the interceptor. The pilot in front of him let his ship jerk and juke back and forth. Drag from the damaged wing solar panels made all moves to the right quicker and harder to recover from. Corin dropped his targeting reticle just to starboard of the stricken fighter. The interceptor drifted to the right, and he fired. The lasers took the right wing clean off. The squint immediately whirled off into a flat spin to port, uncontrolled and unrecoverable. Corin pulled up before he saw the interceptor crash. Part of him hoped the pilot had the intelligence to eject before he died. He glanced at his monitor and angled his ship onto an intercept for the rest of the squadron's outbound course. Nine to Rogue Leader. I'm still here. He heard plenty of anger pulsing through Wedge's reply.
You're supposed to be leading, not following, Nine.
Copy, lead. I was getting clear, but two squints made a run.
So you made a run.
Avenging General Corfay. Corin figured Wedge would catch the reference and realized the interceptors were closing on a transport when he picked them off. He looked at his fuel indicator. Lead, I have a problem.
I know, Nine. Your astromech just answered an inquiry I sent.
The Twi'lek's voice broke into the frequency.
Lead, another dozen squints have launched and are following the wave behind us.
Lead, this is four. Let's stay. It's only 22 of them.
Lead, five here. I'm game.
Corin smiled. Thanks, guys.
Quiet! This isn't a democracy. And what we want to do doesn't matter. We have orders, and others are depending on those orders being obeyed.
Static filled the speakers for a moment, then Wedge spoke again.
We do have some leeway in obeying them, though. Change in plans. We'll go Sunside and draw the imps with us. Nine, you will go in on the dark side and go to ground. The atmosphere is thin, but your life support equipment can concentrate it enough for you. If you can avoid them, we'll be back for you.
I'll do my best, Lead.
Corin brought his X-Wing into position with the rest of the squadron.
Four. How many did you vape?
I got six. You?
Three. If we count the one in the canyon.
It counts, Nine. Unconventional, but it counts.
Thanks, Commander.
Rosati broke into the conversation.
What did you do, Nine?
It's complicated. I'll explain it later.
Even as he pronounced the word later, it turned to dust in his mouth.
I'm only at 17. You're plus two on me, Four. I'm gonna count the ones I get on the dark side in our contest.
I would not have it any other way, Nine.
Nawara Venn spoke.
Nine! Gavin's an ace now.
Never doubted it for a minute. Good going, kid.
Borlaeus's moon loomed large overhead.
Welcome to the club.
10 seconds to break, rogues. Nine, don't feel you have to be a hero.
Have to be? I'm a rogue. I thought hero came with the territory.
It certainly does, Nine. Break now!
Corin banked off to the left as the rest of the squadron went right and filled his aft sensor scope.
Later, my friends.
If there was any reply, it didn't make it over the horizon to him. Corin throttled back and took the X-Wing down close to the lunar surface. He cut off his comm unit and flipped his sensors over to passive mode.
Okay, Whistler, it's just you and me. Let's find us a hole to crawl into. No, not one to hide in, but one to ambush out of.
The commander knew as well as we did that this split wouldn't fool all the Imperial pilots.
They'll come for us eventually. I've never had a desire to die alone, and taking a bunch of them along will suit me just fine.
37.
As certain as taxes, and as slow as paperwork they come.
With his X-Wing nestled in a frozen lava tube on the side of a volcano, Corin watched as paired interceptors flew search patterns over the lunar surface. They'd pushed enough power to their sensors that even with having them focused directly downward, enough energy bled off to register on his passive receptors. Whistler had detected differences in the energy signatures of each sensor unit and had isolated a dozen different interceptors. That means 10 squints didn't make it back from their pursuit. Given that the rogues had only 15 minutes to play, that's very good work. He reached up and tapped the transparisteel at the rear of his cockpit.
Whistler, they've been at this search stuff for nearly half an hour. Have you got the solution worked up yet?
The droid piped a jeer at him.
Hey, just asking.
Corin started his engines and shunted power to the weapons control. He armed two proton torpedoes.
Ready when you are.
A countdown clock appeared on his console and slowly started running down. The squints continued their back and forth grid search pattern, moving ever closer to his position. From the second he saw what they were doing, he asked Whistler to time the runs. They remained constant for speed and duration, which told Corin the pilots had done exactly what he would have. They programmed the search pattern into their navigational computers and let it run on autopilot.
which means we know where they'll be in 35.3 seconds.
He nodded grimly.
I'm dead, but you'll be dead sooner. And that's a bit of a victory, to be sure.
It occurred to Corin that he was angry about dying. That emotion seemed, on the surface, to be rather logical. But emotions rarely were. Had someone described his current situation to him and asked him how he'd feel, he would have told them he'd have been scared out of his wits. The fact was, however, that the anger overshadowed the fear. He took a deep breath and forced himself to relax.
Fear and anger aren't right here.
He knew that going out to bring the interceptors down, just so he'd take more of them with him when he died, was wrong. He didn't know if the pilots were clones or volunteers or conscripts or mercenaries. And who they were didn't really matter. The only reason he had for fighting against them was the same one he'd had for going after the squints down on Borlaeus.
I want to stop the Empire from taking lives. I'm not an Avenger. I'm here to protect others.
He smiled. Somehow it seemed right that he, son and grandson of men who protected others in Korsak, had followed them into Korsak and had ended up here with the rebellion. His life, his father's life, his grandfather's life had all been devoted to safeguarding others.
And now the guys on the ground and Salm's bomber jocks will get protected.
The timer went to zero. Corin hit the trigger. Two proton torpedoes streaked out from the launch tubes on either side of the X-Wing. Because they were programmed to reach a certain point at a certain time, Corin did not need to target lock on the pair of squints flying past. A kilometer separated them from the X-Wing, and the torpedoes went from launch to target in under half a second. The first torpedo stabbed through the closest interceptor and detonated. The explosion vaporized the squint, reducing it to its component molecules. The second torpedo actually overshot its target, but went off when it reached its programmed range. The blast crumpled the starboard wing. The interceptor began to roll through a tight downward spiral, then slammed into a basalt monolith and exploded. Shoving the throttle forward, Corin held the stick steady as his snub fighter shot from the lava tube. Once clear, he hauled back on the stick and climbed. He saw other interceptors break their search patterns, but none of them immediately moved after him.
Their sensors are still oriented toward the ground.
He flipped his weapons controls over to lasers and set them on quad fire. It would slow his overall rate of fire, but a solid hit was a kill, and he needed all the help he could get. Inverting the X-Wing, he took a quick look at the interceptors as he flew past the volcano's crater. Spotting a pair of targets moving toward where the first squints had gone down, he rolled the fighter up on the starboard S-foil and came around in a wide curve. He dove and leveled out in a small valley between the volcano and a meteor crater. Climbing at the last second, he rose up over the broad lunar plain and sent two bursts of laser fire into the belly of a squint. The starfighter obliged by melting into a metallic fog that instantly condensed and rained down on the moon. Whistler hooted proudly.
Darn right! Horn pulls ahead of the Bactoboy!
Corkscrewing his ship into a weave, Corin avoided the retribution of the squint's wingman. He leveled out for a second, then cut the fighter hard right. 90 degrees from his original track, he leveled out again, then climbed and did a wing over to port that pointed him straight back at the interceptor that had tried to stay on his tail. Corin rolled, shot, melted some armor for the squint, and broke hard right again. He shook his head in response to Whistler's question.
No, I don't think I killed it. Burned him a bit, though.
Corin rolled the X-Wing through inversion and hit the left rudder to again carry himself back across his own trail. Green spears of laser light crisscrossed through the moon's thin air as the interceptors converged on his ship. Whistler toted 9 up on the monitor and made the closest ones flash red on the screen. Static hissed through Corin's helmet as it occasional hits weakened his shields, but energy shunted from lasers reinforced it quickly enough. He glanced at his fuel indicator. As much as we could teach them something about flying, it's time we changed some of the rules here. He broke left and climbed, then came over, inverted, and pointed his fighter at the volcano's cone. We'll see if these guys are such hot stuff in the place where hot stuff used to spew. The astromech droid splashed a message on the console. Yes, inviting them into the caldera will be fine. The enclosed area will hurt them more than it does me. Just like it hurt the ties that Wedge nailed on Rachuk. Corrin brought the fighter down into the crater and throttled back to zero thrust. He cut in the repulsor lift engines and powered them up so he hung suspended in the middle of the obsidian arena. As he pointed the fighter's nose toward the sky, he glanced at Whistler's reply to his earlier statement.
Yeah, 9-1 odds are hardly fair.
The X-Wing shook violently, as if a titanic child had grabbed it in an invisible fist. Whistler hooted anxiously, and Corrin felt his stomach turn inside out. Tractor beam! It's all over. The astromech droid wailed piteously. Corrin read the message on his console and shook his head. Hey, it's not your fault. You're telling me the odds isn't why they evened them. He brought his torpedo control up again as the first interceptor streaked over the lip of the volcano's crater. Sensors forward, Whistler. Time to remind them that trapping a rogue doesn't make him dead, just deadlier. 38. Locked in the silence of hyperspace, Wedge glanced back over his shoulder and frowned. Are you absolutely certain about the timing on this search pattern thing? Minox spun his head around and bleated imploringly. Fine. The droid's numbers indicated that a standard Imperial square-click search pattern would take 2.5 standard hours to scour the dark side of the moon. If Corrin managed to stay ahead of them and slip over to the light side, then they'd have to search it, too. That means he could still be hiding from them. If not... Wedge glanced at his fighter's chronometer. If not, they found him a minimum of 1.5 hours ago. Frustration balled Wedge's hands into fists. He knew they'd done everything they could within mission parameters to help Corrin. The first set of 10 interceptors had caught up with them because they had throttled back and waited. The 5 rogues had easily dispatched their foes, but the dogfight took them to critical fuel levels. They went to light speed, leaving 12 squints to hunt for Corrin. At the first transit jump, he'd ordered everyone to spend the trip into Noquivzor, working up plans to go back and get Corrin out. For the past 3 hours, he'd put together a rescue operation and had figured out all sorts of contingencies depending upon what intelligence they could get from Borlaeus. Defender Wing would not yet have arrived at Borlaeus by the time the rogues landed at Noquivzor, but there was an outside chance that Page's people could have some news and have tapped into the Imperial Holonet to deliver it. That was a long shot, but getting information from the Holonet was not. Borlaeus would certainly have reported being under attack, and that report might contain details that would indicate Corrin's status. The second he reverted to real space, he'd have M-Trace search out the latest information from Borlaeus. I need to know what to expect when we go back. His core plan was risky, and he knew Akbar would never approve it. The mission risks had been pointed out in advance. Corrin had volunteered to go. He would be missed, but jeopardizing other people to effect a rescue that probably would not work would be foolish. As much as he knew Akbar would be right in pointing all those things out, he also knew he couldn't abandon one of his people. I've lost too many friends to the Empire not to do everything I can to save others. He knew his insistence on Tycho Selchu's inclusion in Rogue Squadron was just such a rescue. He smiled wryly. And saving him from Salm was tougher than pulling Corrin out of Borlaeus ever will be. At Noquivzor, the Rogues could be refueled and head back out inside 1/2 hour, He assumed the return trip would actually go off in an hour, because he recalled that being the minimum amount of time Tex needed to put the lasers back in the Forbidden. With Tycho flying the shuttle, and the X-Wings as escort, they'd be more than a match for the dozen interceptors in the Borlaeus system.
Dozen? I'll bet Corrin will leave us half that number.
Wedge sat back for a moment. He realized he thought of Corrin as Corrin, not Lieutenant Horn. The distance he had placed between himself and Corrin had collapsed in on itself. He'd purposely chosen to distance himself from all the new recruits to maintain authority over them. As loose as Rogue Squadron was, that detachment was necessary if they were to follow him. Even so, he suddenly realized he had insulated himself from them for his own protection. Having lost so many friends, having felt the pain of their deaths, he had been reluctant to let anyone else get close. Not befriending them meant he could blunt the pain of seeing them die. He regretted Lujane Forge and Dorney Hui and Peshk Vrsik dying, but he had not been as deeply hurt by their deaths as he had when Biggs or Porkins or Dak had died. Emotional distance is armor for the heart. That armor was necessary, because without it, the overwhelming nature of the fight against the Empire would crush him. After seeing how many had been slain, it would have been easy to assume all was for naught. But if we assume that, the Death Stars would be ravaging planets, and the Emperor would still rule the galaxy. Corrin had earned the friendship Wedge felt for him, and not just through his skill in an X-Wing. He had taken to heart the things Wedge had told him about becoming part of the unit. Corrin had clearly known that to go after the interceptors closing on an assault shuttle was to be left behind. He had made that choice because it was really no choice at all. The rest of the unit would have made the same choice too, and they'll want to go back to get Corrin. By jumping straight from Nokwivzor to Borlaeus without making a side jump first, they could reach the world in under 3 hours. Doing that would expose Nokwivzor to discovery by Imperial forces, but Wedge expected Page's people to be giving them other things to think about. Even so, a jump to the outer edge of the Borlaeus system, and then another jump in closer, would bring them out of hyperspace from a direction that would hide their point of origin.
I hope.
A green button started blinking on the command console. Wedge punched it, and hyperspace melted into the Nokwivzor system. He immediately keyed his call. Rogue Leader to M-Tray.
M-Tray here, sir. I have an urgent message for Broad Chase.
It's not as urgent as my orders, M-Tray. Get Zry set up to refuel us, and get Tex mounting lasers on the Forbidden. An hour from now, at the most, we're heading back out.
Yes, sir.
And contact intelligence. I want any holonet data coming out of Borlaeus.
Yes, sir.
The droid sounded agitated.
Sir, we do have some information from Borlaeus.
You do? Wedge's heart started to pound inside his chest. What is it? Is it about Corrin?
Yes, sir.
Give it to me!
It's a hologram.
Wedge frowned. Have the computer mash it to two dimensions and send it.
You may want to wait, sir.
M-Tray!
Transmitting now, sir, at your request.
The monitor resolved itself into an image of Corrin Horn. Wedge shook his head. What?
If you're seeing this, Commander Antilles,
Corrin said solemnly,
I know I was left behind.
39. Corrin popped one proton torpedo off and watched the lead interceptor evaporate. Thumbing his weapons control over to lasers, he started to track the next tie. The tractor beam limited his ship's range of motion, but a heavy foot on a rudder pedal started turning him in the right direction. Just a bit more. The interceptor exploded as red laser bolts ripped through the cockpit. Corrin looked down at his hand and couldn't recall having hit the trigger. More laser fire transformed another tie into a fireball.
What in the cloak of the Sith?
Whistler started hooting frantically. Corrin hesitated, not comprehending, then flipped his comm unit back on as his fighter began to rise through the volcano, picking up speed.
Repeat, is your hyperdrive still operational?
He recognized the voice. Mirax?
Yeah. You ready to get smuggled out of here?
Hyperdrive is a go.
Key it to my signal.
Whistler, do it. Corrin didn't afford himself the luxury of looking back at the ship that had tractored his fighter. The forward view had more than enough to entertain him. Borlaeus's moon was receding quickly into the starfield, as were the squints. Green lancets of laser fire reached out toward him, but they splashed harmlessly against his shields. His return fire scattered the ties, and one more fell prey to Skate's gunner. Whistler piped a warning at him, then the starfield stretched into columns, and they entered hyperspace. A second or two later, they came back out again, at a point well below the Pyrea system's elliptic plane.
Corrin, bring your fighter around and come up into the hold.
Gladly, Skate. He complied with the order and found his 12.5-meter-long fighter fit snugly in the hold. He waited for Mirax to repressurize the hold after closing the loading bay doors. Then he popped his cockpit canopy open and vaulted from the X-Wing. He landed on the deck with a thump, then smiled as the hold hatch opened.
Permission to come aboard, Captain Tarek. Promise you won't tell my father?
Mirax smiled and strode boldly across the deck to him.
He'd die if he could see an X-Wing with Corsec markings in the belly of his ship. And if my father hadn't been killed years ago, having my ship here would have gotten him, too.
Corrin enfolded Mirax in a hug.
Your secret is safe with me. Likewise, Corrin.
He didn't let his arms slacken until he felt her hug loosen first.
And I commend you on your shooting. You popped 3 interceptors in no time.
Mirax pulled away from him and pointed toward the hatchway.
He did it, not me.
The silhouette in the hatchway shrugged.
The Skate is a fairly stable gunnery platform. And the squint pilots weren't the Empire's best.
Pulling off the helmet, Corrin crossed the hold and offered the man his hand.
Still and all, Captain Selchu, it was superior shooting. With skills like that, I can't imagine why you're not flying with us. Commander Antilles said not to ask, and now is not the time, but I want to know the answer.
Mirax patted Corrin on the back and let her hand linger there for a moment, a sensation he relished.
Come on up to the bridge. We'll go to hyperspace and get back to Noquivzor before the others do.
We will? Mirax slapped the nearest bulkhead.
The Skate can push 0.6 past light speed. Not as fast as the Falcon, but definitely better looking. With our speed, we can trim time off the trip back to Noquivzor and fly a course that's shorter. We'll beat them by an hour, just as we did getting here.
Corrin frowned.
But how could you get here, since no one was supposed to know where here was?
Commander Antilles didn't tell the others until our second jump.
The smuggler smiled sweetly at him.
Not my fault you talk in your sleep.
Tycho laughed as he followed Mirax into the Skate's cockpit and dropped into one of the jump seats.
Mirax discovered a possible security breach. We arrived and went to ground on the dark side of the moon. We monitored Borlaeus control traffic and didn't notice unusual activity down there, so we maintained comm silence when the squadron arrived.
Corrin sat down behind him.
If you told us you were there, you might have alerted the Imperials.
Exactly,
Tycho said.
Since the squadron was running with weak comm system transmissions, we couldn't hear what Wedge had planned when he went sunside. But we figured things out from Imperial intercepts. The Verpine droid here has slicing skills that broke the imp scrambling sequence quite quickly. We stayed hidden when the squints started to search, assuming we'd break and run when they reached the volcano.
Mirax looked back at Corrin.
Then you arrived with them on your tail. We grabbed you and pulled you out.
Corin chuckled as he strapped himself into the seat.
I thought I was dead.
I imagine that is what the rest of the squadron will be thinking when they reach No Quibsor.
Tycho slapped Corin on the knee.
Won't they be surprised?
Yeah, I imagine they will.
Corin's eyes narrowed.
And I've got an idea, which means we can have some fun with them.
Mirax tapped the console and smiled at her Sullustan pilot.
Get us going, Liat. And fast, too. The Pulsar Skate will be the first ship ever to smuggle a man back from the grave. And I mean for us to do it in record time at that.
40.
On Borlaeus' moon.
Corin's image continued.
I know the decision to leave me behind wasn't easy.
Wedge's eyes narrowed. On Borlaeus' moon? How could he have known? Wait a minute.
I want you to know, I harbor no ill will concerning my abandonment. To prove this to you, I pried some Wyrens Reserve away from M'Tray, and a rye skate should have finished baking by the time you land.
Woohoo!
Gavin's voice echoed through the comm. Wedge keyed his comm.
Horn, if you aren't dead, you will be.
Corin's image broke into laughter.
I'm happy to see you too, Commander. Welcome home.
Wedge sat back in his chair and held the half-full tumbler up so the light from the center of the recreation room made the amber liquid in it glow. Its chemical warmth, aided and abetted by seeing Corin alive and unhurt, had chased the chilly dread from his belly and melted the stress in his shoulders and neck. Putting his feet up on the table, he actually began to relax for the first time in conscious memory. In retrospect, Corin's message was rather funny. He watched his green-eyed lieutenant cut the warm rye skate and hand it out to the other pilots in the squadron. They were all giddy with their success and his survival. Wedge knew they had all been as horrified as he had when the message began to play in their cockpits, but no one was more relieved than he had been when the truth of it was revealed to them. As jokes go, Corin, it was good. You'll pay for it, of course, but it was good. Wedge glanced sidelong at Tycho. I can't believe you let him send that message.
The Alderaanian shrugged. The shocked expression on your face was even better than I imagined it would be.
I won't forget that, Captain Selchew.
Besides, I can't wait to see how you're going to get back at Corin.
Tycho took a swallow of his lum.
I trust you'll make it good.
You can be assured of that.
Wedge sipped a little more whiskey and let it sit on his tongue for a moment. Sucking air in through slightly parted lips let the crisp, woody aroma fill his head. Then he swallowed and smiled.
Corin comes back from the dead, and I understand you were resurrected too.
Three squints? Tycho nodded solemnly.
Two were at point-blank range. M'Tray could have shot them. The third was at range. Decent shot.
Of course, the Alliance security team is a bit upset at having been detained in your quarters.
No. They weren't very happy when we took them prisoner.
His executive officer winced.
The problem was we had a possible security leak. But explaining everything we would have had to explain would have made it impossible for us to get to Borlaeus in time to warn you. If that's what we needed to do.
Easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Wedge chuckled.
I was planning the same sort of thing for the return trip to Borlaeus. You've got the security problem under control?
I think so. Locking this thing down will mean a lot of time being spent with M'Tray.
Put Corin on it.
Tycho shook his head.
You? That's nastier than even I assumed you'd be.
Well, leading a unit isn't a young man's game, after all.
Wedge swung his feet to the floor and set his tumbler on the table as Corin approached with two pieces of rice cake.
Smells good.
Mirax made it. Corin handed the other piece to Tycho. Corellians use it for celebrations. Wedge hefted his piece of the sweet cake.
Getting you back from Borlaeus is worthy of celebration. As is having the Alliance's hottest new pilot being a member of the squadron.
Corin looked surprised. Me?
No.
Wedge smiled past him at the man arriving late to the celebration.
Congratulations, Broar Jace. The trio of kills you got on the interceptors following us out of the Pyrea system puts you at 22 kills. You beat Lieutenant Horn by one.
The Thypheran beamed, his blue eyes alive with pride.
Thank you, Commander.
He glanced down for a second, then accepted a piece of the cake from Mirax.
This is good news, and helps offset what I have just heard.
Wedge set his cake down next to the glass of whiskey.
And that is?
The message waiting for me was from Thyphera. My great uncle, our patriarch, is dying. The MDs give him 2 weeks at best. Even Bacta cannot cure old age. I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Jace. Broar.
Wedge glanced at his XO.
Tycho, can you...
No problem, Wedge.
Tycho stood up.
Compassion leave won't work, but if we send our pilot home on a recruiting run, I think the diplomatic corps will back us up. You'll be on your way as soon as you can pack your X-Wing, Mr. Jace.
Thank you.
Corin offered Broar his hand.
I'm sorry to know your uncle is ill. I'm also sorry to lose to you, but I'm not sorry about how well you did.
Nor I about your performance.
Broar pumped Corin's hand.
I would give you another chance at such a contest, but I do not want even the slightest hint of division within the squadron.
I concur.
Corin nabbed a small piece of cake from the serving tray on the table and popped it into his mouth. Everyone followed Corin's lead, and as he chewed, just for a second, Wedge felt himself back on Yavin 4. Catching a hasty last meal before he and his friends went off to attack the Death Star. He knew it wasn't the taste of the rice cake that brought the memory back. On Yavin 4, there had been no time and no ingredients to create something so indulgent.
No, it's the sense of unity that takes me back. The core spirit. It was there before Rogue Squadron was ever formed. It was the squadron's soul. And it's still here. This is Rogue Squadron. Not reborn, just continuing as it should. I'd like to offer a toast, my friends, if I may.
Wedge raised his glass, and the others joined him.
To Rogue Squadron. To the friends we've lost, the battles we've fought, and the utter fear our return will bring to our enemies.
Epilogue. Kirtan Lore dropped to one knee before Isan Izard's life-size hologram.
Please forgive my disturbing you, Madam Director, but you said you wanted to be informed immediately on any developments.
She frowned impatiently at him.
I have seen General Derricote's requisition request for more Gamorreans. Has there been a breakthrough?
I am not certain.
But you approved the request.
Yes, Madam Director.
Even though she was projecting her image from her tower office, nearly 3 kilometers above and away from his cramped workspace, the distance did not insulate him from her ire.
Somehow her eyes seemed to project venom through the holonet. You will forgive me, Madam Director, but General Derricote is still upset about the loss of his facility on Borlaeus. He said you promised him it would be returned to him if he completed his work within your parameters.
And so it shall. The Alliance stewardship of Borlaeus will be of little consequence in the grand scheme of things.
Izard's image stared hard at him.
So there is no breakthrough with Derricote?
None to my knowledge, Madam Director.
Then what would have prompted your call to me, Agent Lore?
Our agent in Rogue Squadron has provided us with some useful information. Rogue Squadron will be moving to Borlaeus, and the base will become a major staging operation for a move coreward. Izard tapped her teeth with a fingernail.
This was not unanticipated.
It was also reported that the best of the new pilots, Braw Jace, will be returning to Thyfera to visit his family.
Lore reached back and pulled a datapad from his desk and glanced at it.
Given the precarious balance of loyalists and rebel sympathizers on Thyfera, it seems to me that having a hero of the rebellion visit will not be a good thing. Since his course of travel has been communicated to us, I have prepared orders for the interdictor cruiser Black Asp to intercept and destroy him.
Very good thinking, Agent Lore.
Izard nodded slowly, her eyes focusing distantly.
Amend the orders to have him taken alive, if possible. I have a facility that is most successful in convincing ardent rebels they really should be on our side. I have a room at Lusankia for this Jace. He will prove very useful in the future.
I have the intercept set for a system where enough smuggling goes on that the Black Asp's presence makes sense. An increase in general interception activities will hide our foreknowledge of Jace's course.
The ruler of Coruscant looked quizzically at him.
Do you truly think so?
I do not follow your meaning.
Don't you think your Corrin Horn will be suspicious?
He thought for a moment, then bowed his head.
He will be. But he is not so single-minded that he cannot be distracted.
That concurs with my reading of his data file.
She smiled slightly.
But it would take information of sufficient import to distract him, yes?
Yes, Madam Director.
Good.
She clasped her hands behind her back.
I have let slip the information that you killed Gilbastra.
What?
And it includes data that suggests you are, in fact, here, on Imperial Center.
Kirtan's jaw dropped. He'd seen Horn angry more than once, and knew the man to be relentless in pursuit of those who had slain other members of Corsac. Horn had even found a way to capture his father's killer, the Trandoshan bounty hunter Bossk. Kirtan had taken great delight in releasing Bossk, citing the Trandoshan lack of manual dexterity to explain why Hal Horn had been killed in a spray of blaster fire meant to kill the smuggler to whom he was speaking. Since Bossk was working under a valid Imperial warrant, Hal Horn's death was an unfortunate bit of collateral casualty.
Madam Director, didn't you say the rogues would be coming here, to Imperial Center?
Indeed. I believe I did.
Her smile grew.
And I believe my prediction will be proven true.
Then Horn will come here?
And we'll be looking for you.
Izard licked her lips.
More distraction from his main mission for Lieutenant Horn. And more motivation for you to succeed in Rogue Squadron's destruction.
In this case, I'm not sure those ends justify the means at all.
I see, Madam Director. I'm sure you do, Agent Lore. Spare me future reports about General Derricote's tantrums. I want results, and I want them to be successful results.
As you will it, Madam Director,
he found himself saying in the darkness, resulting from her termination of communication.
He rocked back and sat on the floor. For a half second, he longed for a return to the days when he and Horn were adversaries of Corsac. They had hated each other, especially after the Bosque incident, but the tension had not yet become lethal. Then he realized he harbored no real fear of Corin Horn's retribution.
His success would mean release from her clutches. If he knew that, of course, Horn would find a way to clone me, so he could have the pleasure of killing me and forcing me to work for Isan Izard forever. Yes, he could be that cruel, but he would hold himself back. Therein is his weakness.
Kirtan Lore grabbed the edge of his desk and pulled himself upright.
Here on Imperial Center, in Izard's domain, I have neither the compunction nor need to restrain myself. Do come to Coruscant, Corin. Bring your friends and your hidden enemy with you. Imperial City is undoubtedly the last place you ever thought you'd visit, and I will do all I can to make certain it is the last place you visit.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Rogue Squadron, Star Wars Legends, Rogue Squadron, by Michael A. Stackpole. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Post-production and sound mixing by Paul Goodrich and Justin Kilpatrick at Merlin Studios. Rogue Squadron, Star Wars Legends. Rogue Squadron is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 1996. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007. Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.